Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin is presented by the Riverstone Retirement Communities of Oak Park and Bridalwood Trails, your complete continuum of care.
From the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA, it's Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin. If you have a medical question, call us at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255. Email sundayhousecall@cfra.com. Now here's Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Good afternoon and welcome to edition number 304 of Sunday House Call. We're broadcasting live from the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA here in Ottawa. And taking your calls at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility. And if you are listening outside the calling area, 1-800-580-2372 is the number to call. And all our lines are available. As always, if you call in earlier, get you on the line, spend some time to answer all your questions and answer them in full. I mean, that's the idea behind the show, is to be able to give some detail to things. And sometimes it may take 10 minutes, sometimes 5 minutes, sometimes longer than that, in order to answer not just the question, but also to provide background information about why things happen. That is, for example, the mechanism of a disease process, and then how and why a particular treatment is indicated, and how it actually fits into the understanding of how the disease actually expresses itself. So that's sort of the idea, so that when it comes to talking with your healthcare provider, talking with your physician about a particular problem, it's always better to know more than just the surface information. It's good to know some background. As with anything, fixing a car, building things, understanding history, whatever it is, it's important to have a good background in order to get even more out of the answer. So all our lines are available at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, and looking forward to hearing from you and answering your questions. I have this is a story that's starting to become the second report of this that's coming out of Calgary with regards to measles outbreaks. Last week, there was one child that was reported having measles. This week, there are now 5 confirmed cases of measles reported in the Calgary area. What's interesting about this is that 3 of the 5, and these 5 infected people, range in age from 18 months to 40 years old. 3 of them are related to the toddler whose case was confirmed last week. And it's not clear how the 5th person contracted the virus. What's concerning to health officials in Calgary is that last year there was only 1 confirmed case of measles in the entire province, and there are 5 so far that have occurred in one area in Calgary. And what this indicates is that if you've been vaccinated and then exposed to someone who has the measles, it's very unlikely that you are going to express the disease or catch the disease. But what this indicates is that, for the most part, these particular children and older, the adult at 40 years of age, either had incomplete response to vaccines, had they received them, and that's why there are boosters for measles shots, or they hadn't received the vaccine at all. And measles is extremely contagious. If you had a room of 100 people who were not vaccinated and someone came into the room with measles, 95 of those people out of the 100 would contract measles. It's extremely contagious and very successful at spreading. So this particular story illustrates what we call herd immunity. That is, if you have enough people who are vaccinated, so if we take that same room of 100 people and you have vaccinated 95% of them, so that there's only 5 people that have the potential for contracting measles, the 95% of the people who have been vaccinated act as a buffer, and they actually prevent, in many ways, of the disease being transmitted, because the virus can't jump from one person to another as easily. So it does reduce the risk, and the greater the percentage of people vaccinated, the less likely you see what we see happening in Calgary. So that's sort of an interesting story. There was a similar outbreak in British Columbia. And you see these sporadic outbreaks in the United States as well, particularly in communities where vaccination rates tend to be a little bit lower. Similarly, in London, in the UK, they have areas of London where vaccination rates have reduced to as much as 25% of the population of children. And as a result, they are seeing increasing rates of measles outbreak. In the UK 10 years ago, or a little bit more than 10 years ago, they had 58 cases of measles in the entire country. And now, because of the MMR hoax, which has been completely, MMR has been completely exonerated from leading to autism. But in the interim, people have had in the latest was 2008, the total was over 1,300 compared to 58 from 10 years earlier with regards to people contracting measles, which is a neurological disease. People think of measles as a rash and fever, but it has quite a significant risk of causing inflammation of the brain or encephalitis, and also quite a marked risk of causing permanent problems with regards to brain function thereafter in those that develop encephalitis. So that's sort of the concern that they're having in Calgary, because these toddlers that do catch it are at risk of having more serious illness afterwards. And so they're trying to remind the public that it is important to vaccinate your children to prevent this from happening. In another bit of news, and again, all our lines are free, and I know it's a lovely day outside, but I would love to hear from you. 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 for listeners outside of our calling area. And if you call, you'll be on right now. Otherwise, I'll be talking to myself for the next hour. Be that as it may, there is some evidence that for children, is talking about vaccinations, children that do go for vaccinations, one of the concerns of parents is that their child is going to feel pain and get pretty upset after a shot, which unfortunately does happen. But there is a possibility that we can reduce the intensity or the severity of the perception of pain on the part of the toddler, especially for infants up to 12 months of age. This is published in the Archives of Disease in Childhood, where they did a systematic review of looking at sugar in varying concentrations, that is sucrose or glucose, along with other recommended psychological pain reduction strategies, such as non-nutritive sucking, breastfeeding, or effective means of distraction, as a means of reducing the pain perception and the pain response of the infant. And this reviewed 14 randomized controlled trials that included 1,674 total injections. And they used oral glucose or sucrose solutions compared with water or no treatment at all. And they did different concentrations in these various studies. Some had, the range was anywhere from a 12% to 75% solution of glucose. And they did vary from study to study. The volumes that were used were usually 2 milliliters or less, so very tiny quantity. 2 milliliters is about 1/14th, 1/15th of an ounce, so literally out of a dropper. And they then wanted to see how these children reacted. Now, this ties into a conversation I had with Dr. David Kessler, who was author of the book, a book that we had talked about on Sunday House Call in the past, called The End of Overeating. And sugar causes a release. When they look at brain function, sugar causes a release of endorphins, natural endorphins, which are natural painkillers in our body, which in some ways is linked to why people tend to gravitate towards sugar more often than not. And the bottom line to this study is that they found that the children that did have the sugar had less of a pain response than those children that did not have the sugar water. It did vary, and the percentage was more of crying duration. They found a reduction of about 12 seconds less crying in the infants if they had the sugar, and an average of 10% reduction in the proportion of crying time compared to placebo. So it did seem to have an effect, certainly no harm to doing this. And also, remember, it was used in conjunction with other modalities. So it wasn't just the sugar water. It was using other prevention strategies for being able to using something to distract the child, either a bell or sound or a doll or something colorful that distracted the child, also breastfeeding and also just non-nutritive sucking. But nevertheless, if you're going to be taking your child in, you may want to bring some sugar water, and it's a simple matter of taking some table sugar, mixing in with some water. The concentration, really, in this case, they're not really sure about the concentration that works well. Not going to do very much harm if you're going to give just a couple of drops or 2 milliliters of sugar water to the child just before the vaccination. So it's usually a few minutes beforehand, tended to work quite well. We have 3 callers on the line, and we're going to get to their calls right after the break. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call. Back in just a few minutes.
Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin is brought to you in part by livinghealthychamplain.ca, helping you take control of your health.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, Sunday House Call, News Talk Radio 580, CFRA.
Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin is presented by the Riverstone Retirement Communities of Oak Park and Bridalwood Trails, your complete continuum of care.
From the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA, it's Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin. If you have a medical question, call us at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255. Email sundayhousecall at cfra.com. Now here's Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Good afternoon and welcome to edition number 304 of Sunday House Call. We're broadcasting live from the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA here in Ottawa. And taking your calls at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility. And if you are listening outside the calling area, 1-800-580-2372 is the number to call. And all our lines are available. As always, if you call in earlier, get you on the line, spend some time to answer all your questions and answer them in full. I mean, that's the idea behind the show, is to be able to give some detail to things. And sometimes it may take 10 minutes, sometimes 5 minutes, sometimes longer than that, in order to answer not just the question, but also to provide background information about why things happen. That is, for example, the mechanism of a disease process, and then how and why a particular treatment is indicated, and how it actually fits into the understanding of how the disease actually expresses itself. So that's sort of the idea, so that when it comes to talking with your healthcare provider, talking with your physician about a particular problem, it's always better to know more than just the surface information. It's good to know some background. As with anything, fixing a car, building things, understanding history, whatever it is, it's important to have a good background in order to get even more out of the answer. So all our lines are available at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, and looking forward to hearing from you and answering your questions. I have this is a story that's starting to become the second report of this that's coming out of Calgary with regards to measles outbreaks. Last week, there was one child that was reported having measles. This week, there are now 5 confirmed cases of measles reported in the Calgary area. What's interesting about this is that 3 of the 5, and these 5 infected people range in age from 18 months to 40 years old. 3 of them are related to the toddler whose case was confirmed last week. And it's not clear how the 5th person contracted the virus. What's concerning to health officials in Calgary is that last year there was only 1 confirmed case of measles in the entire province, and there are 5 so far that have occurred in one area in Calgary. And what this indicates is that if you've been vaccinated and then exposed to someone who has the measles, it's very unlikely that you are going to express the disease or catch the disease. But what this indicates is that, for the most part, these particular children and older, the adult at 40 years of age, either had incomplete response to vaccines, had they received them, and that's why there are boosters for measles shots, or they hadn't received the vaccine at all. And measles is extremely contagious. If you had a room of 100 people who were not vaccinated and someone came into the room with measles, 95 of those people out of the 100 would contract measles. It's extremely contagious and very successful at spreading. So this particular story illustrates what we call herd immunity. That is, if you have enough people who are vaccinated, so if we take that same room of 100 people and you have vaccinated 95% of them, so that there's only 5 people that have the potential for contracting measles, the 95% of the people who have been vaccinated act as a buffer, and they actually prevent in many ways of the disease being transmitted because the virus can't jump from one person to another as easily. So it does reduce the risk, and the greater the percentage of people vaccinated, the less likely you see what we see happening in Calgary. So that's sort of an interesting story. There was a similar outbreak in British Columbia, and you see these sporadic outbreaks in the United States as well, particularly in communities where vaccination rates tend to be a little bit lower. Similarly, in London, in the UK, they have areas of London where vaccination rates have reduced to as much as 25% of the population of children. And as a result, they are seeing increasing rates of measles outbreak. In the UK 10 years ago, or a little bit more than 10 years ago, they had 58 cases of measles in the entire country. And now, because of the MMR hoax, which has been completely, MMR has been completely exonerated from leading to autism. But in the interim, people have had in the latest was 2008, the total was over 1,300 compared to 58 from 10 years earlier with regards to people contracting measles, which is a neurological disease. People think of measles as a rash and fever, but it has quite a significant risk of causing inflammation of the brain or encephalitis, and also quite a marked risk of causing permanent problems with regards to brain function thereafter in those that develop encephalitis. So that's sort of the concern that they're having in Calgary, because these toddlers that do catch it are at risk of having more serious illness afterwards. And so they're trying to remind the public that it is important to vaccinate your children to prevent this from happening. In another bit of news, and again, all our lines are free, and I know it's a lovely day outside, but I would love to hear from you. 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 for listeners outside of our calling area. And if you call, you'll be on right now. Otherwise, I'll be talking to myself for the next hour. Be that as it may, there is some evidence that for children, is talking about vaccinations, children that do go for vaccinations, one of the concerns of parents is that their child is going to feel pain and get pretty upset after a shot, which unfortunately does happen. But there is a possibility that we can reduce the intensity or the severity of the perception of pain on the part of the toddler, especially for infants up to 12 months of age. This is published in the Archives of Disease in Childhood, where they did a systematic review of looking at sugar in varying concentrations, that is sucrose or glucose, along with other recommended psychological pain reduction strategies, such as non-nutritive sucking, breastfeeding, or effective means of distraction, as a means of reducing the pain perception and the pain response of the infant. And this reviewed 14 randomized controlled trials that included 1,674 total injections. And they used oral glucose or sucrose solutions compared with water or no treatment at all. And they did different concentrations in these various studies. Some had, the range was anywhere from a 12% to 75% solution of glucose. And they did vary from study to study. The volumes that were used were usually 2 milliliters or less, so a very tiny quantity. 2 milliliters is about 1/14th, 1/15th of an ounce, so literally out of a dropper. And they then wanted to see how these children reacted. Now, this ties into a conversation I had with Dr. David Kessler, who was author of the book, a book that we had talked about on Sunday House Call in the past, called The End of Overeating. And sugar causes a release. When they look at brain function, sugar causes a release of endorphins, natural endorphins, which are natural painkillers in our body, which in some ways is linked to why people tend to gravitate towards sugar more often than not. And the bottom line to this study is that they found that the children that did have the sugar had less of a pain response than those children that did not have the sugar water. It did vary, and the percentage was more of crying duration. They found a reduction of about 12 seconds less crying in the infants if they had the sugar, and an average of 10% reduction in the proportion of crying time compared to placebo. So it did seem to have an effect, certainly no harm to doing this. And also, remember, it was used in conjunction with other modalities. So it wasn't just the sugar water. It was using other prevention strategies for being able to using something to distract the child, either a bell or sound or a doll or something colorful that distracted the child, also breastfeeding and also just non-nutritive sucking. But nevertheless, if you're going to be taking your child in, you may want to bring some sugar water, and it's a simple matter of taking some table sugar, mixing in with some water. The concentration, really, in this case, they're not really sure about the concentration that works well. Not going to do very much harm if you're going to give just a couple of drops or 2 milliliters of sugar water to the child just before the vaccination. So it's usually a few minutes beforehand, tended to work quite well. We have 3 callers on the line, and we're going to get to their calls right after the break. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call. Back in just a few minutes.
Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin is brought to you in part by livinghealthychamplain.ca, helping you take control of your health.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, Sunday House Call, News Talk Radio 580, CFRA.
Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin is presented by the Riverstone Retirement Communities of Oak Park and Bridalwood Trails, your complete continuum of care.
From the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA, it's Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin. If you have a medical question, call us at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255. Email sundayhousecall@cfra.com. Now here's Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Good afternoon and welcome to edition number 304 of Sunday House Call. We're broadcasting live from the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA here in Ottawa. And taking your calls at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility. And if you are listening outside the calling area, 1-800-580-2372 is the number to call. And all our lines are available. As always, if you call in earlier, get you on the line, spend some time to answer all your questions and answer them in full. I mean, that's the idea behind the show, is to be able to give some detail to things. And sometimes it may take 10 minutes, sometimes 5 minutes, sometimes longer than that, in order to answer not just the question, but also to provide background information about why things happen. That is, for example, the mechanism of a disease process, and then how and why a particular treatment is indicated, and how it actually fits into the understanding of how the disease actually expresses itself. So that's sort of the idea, so that when it comes to talking with your healthcare provider, talking with your physician about a particular problem, it's always better to know more than just the surface information. It's good to know some background. As with anything, fixing a car, building things, understanding history, whatever it is, it's important to have a good background in order to get even more out of the answer. So all our lines are available at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, and looking forward to hearing from you and answering your questions. I have this is a story that's starting to become the second report of this that's coming out of Calgary with regards to measles outbreaks. Last week, there was one child that was reported having measles. This week, there are now 5 confirmed cases of measles reported in the Calgary area. What's interesting about this is that 3 of the 5, and these 5 infected people range in age from 18 months to 40 years old. 3 of them are related to the toddler whose case was confirmed last week. And it's not clear how the 5th person contracted the virus. What's concerning to health officials in Calgary is that last year there was only one confirmed case of measles in the entire province, and there are five so far that have occurred in one area in Calgary. And what this indicates is that if you've been vaccinated and then exposed to someone who has the measles, it's very unlikely that you are going to express the disease or catch the disease. But what this indicates is that, for the most part, these particular children and older, the adult at 40 years of age, either had incomplete response to vaccines, had they received them, and that's why there are boosters for measles shots, or they hadn't received the vaccine at all. And measles is extremely contagious. If you had a room of 100 people who were not vaccinated and someone came into the room with measles, 95 of those people out of the 100 would contract measles. It's extremely contagious and very successful at spreading. So this particular story illustrates what we call herd immunity. That is, if you have enough people who are vaccinated, so if we take that same room of 100 people and you have vaccinated 95% of them, so that there's only five people that have the potential for contracting measles, the 95% of the people who have been vaccinated act as a buffer, and they actually prevent, in many ways, of the disease being transmitted because the virus can't jump from one person to another as easily. So it does reduce the risk, and the greater the percentage of people vaccinated, the less likely you see what we see happening in Calgary. So that's sort of an interesting story. There was a similar outbreak in British Columbia, and you see these sporadic outbreaks in the United States as well, particularly in communities where vaccination rates tend to be a little bit lower. Similarly, in London, in the UK, they have areas of London where vaccination rates have reduced to as much as 25% of the population of children. And as a result, they are seeing increasing rates of measles outbreak. In the UK 10 years ago, or a little bit more than 10 years ago, they had 58 cases of measles in the entire country. And now, because of the MMR hoax, which has been completely, MMR has been completely exonerated from leading to autism. But in the interim, people have had the latest was 2008, the total was over 1,300 compared to 58 from 10 years earlier with regards to people contracting measles, which is a neurological disease. People think of measles as a rash and fever, but it has quite a significant risk of causing inflammation of the brain or encephalitis, and also quite a marked risk of causing permanent problems with regards to brain function thereafter in those that develop encephalitis. So that's sort of the concern that they're having in Calgary, because these toddlers that do catch it are at risk of having more serious illness afterwards. And so they're trying to remind the public that it is important to vaccinate your children to prevent this from happening. In another bit of news, and again, all our lines are free, and I know it's a lovely day outside, but I would love to hear from you. 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 for listeners outside of our calling area. And if you call, you'll be on right now. Otherwise, I'll be talking to myself for the next hour. Be that as it may, there is some evidence that for children, is talking about vaccinations, children that do go for vaccinations, one of the concerns of parents is that their child is going to feel pain and get pretty upset after a shot, which unfortunately does happen. But there is a possibility that we can reduce the intensity or the severity of the perception of pain on the part of the toddler, especially for infants up to 12 months of age. This is published in the Archives of Disease in Childhood, where they did a systematic review of looking at sugar in varying concentrations, that is sucrose or glucose, along with other recommended psychological pain reduction strategies, such as non-nutritive sucking, breastfeeding, or effective means of distraction, as a means of reducing the pain perception and the pain response of the infant. And this reviewed 14 randomized controlled trials That included 1,674 total injections. And they used oral glucose or sucrose solutions compared with water or no treatment at all. And they did different concentrations in these various studies. Some had, the range was anywhere from a 12% to 75% solution of glucose. And they did vary from study to study. The volumes that were used were usually 2 milliliters or less, so a very tiny quantity. 2 milliliters is about 1/14th, 1/15th of an ounce, so literally out of a dropper. And they then wanted to see how these children reacted. Now, this ties into a conversation I had with Dr. David Kessler, who was author of the book, a book that we had talked about on Sunday House Call in the past, called The End of Overeating. And sugar causes a release. When they look at brain function, sugar causes a release of endorphins, natural endorphins, which are natural painkillers in our body, which in some ways is linked to why people tend to gravitate towards sugar more often than not. And the bottom line to this study is that they found that the children that did have the sugar had less of a pain response than those children that did not have the sugar water. It did vary, and the percentage was more of crying duration. They found a reduction of about 12 seconds less crying in the infants if they had the sugar, and an average of 10% reduction in the proportion of crying time compared to placebo. So it did seem to have an effect, certainly no harm to doing this. And also, remember, it was used in conjunction with other modalities. So it wasn't just the sugar water. It was using other prevention strategies for being able to using something to distract the child, either a bell or sound or a doll or something colorful that distracted the child, also breastfeeding and also just non-nutritive sucking. But nevertheless, if you're going to be taking your child in, you may want to bring some sugar water, and it's a simple matter of taking some table sugar, mixing in with some water. The concentration, really, in this case, they're not really sure about the concentration that works well. Not going to do very much harm if you're going to give just a couple of drops or 2 milliliters of sugar water to the child just before the vaccination. So it's usually a few minutes beforehand. Tended to work quite well. We have 3 callers on the line, and we're going to get to their calls right after the break. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call. Back in just a few minutes.
Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin is brought to you in part by livinghealthychamplain.ca, helping you take control of your health.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, Sunday House Call, News Talk Radio 580, CFRA. Now back to Dr. Barry Dworkin on 580 CFRA Sunday House Call. The numbers, 521-TALK, 521-8255.
And a good afternoon to Mike.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm taking a Nexium right now for acid reflux. Now, when you have this problem, are you producing too much acid or is it not enough? Which one is it now?
Well, actually, you're probably producing the regular amount of acid, but the problem is that because there's a hiatus hernia, normally what your body has is a valve. The valve is at the bottom between the esophagus and the stomach. The esophagus is a tube that runs from your throat down to the stomach. And there's a valve or a sphincter called the lower esophageal sphincter. That's at the level of our diaphragm. The diaphragm actually has a muscle that forms that sphincter that prevents the normally produced acid in your stomach from splashing up into the esophagus. Yeah. But when there's a hiatus hernia, a portion of that stomach that is normally below that valve now is squeezed up towards the chest area and is no longer protected and blocked from secreting acid now into the esophagus because now it's bypassed that valve.
Yeah.
So the danger is that acid that normally should reside in the stomach that splashes up into the esophagus has no protective layer. It has none of the mucus or any of the protection that the stomach will produce to protect its own cells. And as a result, that acid can erode the esophagus and the tissue, forming scars, narrowing the esophagus. And in some cases, over a long term, an emphasis on long term, that is decades, can result in cancerous change of the esophagus. And so by suppressing the acid that is normally produced in the stomach, you're reducing the risk of damage to the esophagus in this case because of the hiatus hernia. So it's not that there's too much acid or too little. It's that the acid that is being produced normally is now going to an area that it's not supposed to.
Could the Nexium lower, could that be a side effect that the Nexium could lower the acid, or does that happen?
Yes. What the Nexium is does, and Nexium is in a class of medications called proton pump inhibitors. A proton pump is, they're literally pumps that are in the cells in the stomach that secrete hydrogen ions, which is acid. And so what this medication does is it stops those pumps from working, so you don't have that acid that's secreted into the stomach, and hence you don't have any acid that gets into the esophagus, damaging the esophagus. So it dramatically reduces the secretion and expression of acid in the stomach to avoid the damage done to the esophagus.
You know, what is hydrochloric acid that you can take for acid reflux? What does that do then? You can buy in the drugstore.
Well, no, hydrochloric acid is, I wouldn't take that. That's acid. In fact, that's what your stomach is producing, is hydrochloric acid.
Okay.
So, no. If you did that, you wouldn't be a happy camper.
Okay. Is there any relationship between low stomach acid and eczema? Have you ever heard of that?
No relationship between that and eczema. Again, the acid in itself is normally used by the stomach to break down proteins and other compounds that come into the stomach. It sort of is the pre-digestive phase before it goes into the intestines. But it's not absolutely necessary for digestion. Where it is important, and where, especially for people who are on long-term use of these medications, is that the acid is necessary for activating various other compounds for your body to absorb vitamin B12.
Okay.
And so it's important over the long term to check what your vitamin B12 level is, because you may have to take supplements or even shots of B12 if it goes down too low, because there is a compound called intrinsic factor, which is activated by the acid in your stomach that carries vitamin B12 to the far end of your small intestine to be absorbed. And so if you're taking acid suppression medications over the long term, you may find your B12 level goes down.
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Mike.
Okay,
all the best. Bye-bye now. And we're going to line two. And Sheila, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm just calling. I've had this, I don't know, like I just cannot rehydrate for, I would say for a few months. I didn't notice at first, wasn't keeping track. But I do drink a lot of water on a regular basis. But it doesn't, I could sit and drink 8 cups of water and I'm still feeling dehydrated. It's like my mouth is so dry that I haven't had water in like a week. And I can't understand it, what's going on, but I have to tell you, it almost seems like it coincided with a strange change in my menstrual cycle where I've been regular forever. And all of a sudden, I was like a month late, and then it would come, and it's like 2 and 5 months where it used to be very regular.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm starting to get, not acne, but a certain type of breakout almost on my face until I actually get my menstrual cycle. It's like my hormone levels are out of whack.
Okay. Sheila, how old are you?
41.
Okay. And has there been any, have you spoken to your doctor about this?
Well, I went in and they did like an iron test, I think, and I'm kind of low, but I'm not that low. Like I've just always been I don't process iron all that well.
Okay.
But it wasn't alarming or anything. And I think they were talking about possibly doing a hormone test and a thyroid test.
Okay. Well, that's a good thing.
So, yeah, so that would be our next step to look at. But we're kind of early in the stage. I just happen to be listening. And
okay.
You know.
Well, the other thing I would check is blood sugar. Because if, you know, if by chance one of the symptoms of diabetes is excessive thirst. And so that is something very straightforward to check, is to do a fasting blood glucose or even just a regular glucose test. Because if the sugar is high, that could also explain why you're always thirsty.
Now, wouldn't you lose weight, though?
You potentially could, but this is early stage, though. You've mentioned that this has been...
Yeah, it's just been around, I would say, the last couple of months, like since Christmas.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily where you're going to see a lot of weight loss. Usually you see a lot of weight loss, you know, people have type 1 diabetes, they tend to lose a lot of weight. People have type 2 diabetes don't tend to lose very much weight when their sugars go up. So there is that aspect of it. But it's a very straightforward test. In terms of looking at what's happening,
That would be probably...
It's one of the things that's added. I mean, it's great that you're going to have the thyroid test done. Other things to check for is your what we call a cortisol level. It's a type of, it's cortisone, but it's called a morning cortisol level to see if that's having an effect, because that can also affect in terms of thirst and hydration.
What would cortisol, like what is...
Well, cortisol is produced, it's cortisone. It's produced by our adrenal glands. It's important for all kinds of functions. It's used as a precursor to make other hormones. It's responsible in part as well with water balance and electrolyte balance, that is salt and potassium and other minerals in our body. So that's another aspect of things that can be checked.
Where is that produced?
Our adrenal glands. The adrenal glands are tiny glands that are sitting on top of our kidneys.
Oh, interesting.
So it does sound, and I happen to agree with you, it sounds like something hormonal is happening.
Yeah.
But there are many types of, many different kinds of hormone systems that can be involved in this particular condition, especially since this has been an abrupt change.
Yeah.
Where you're now drinking more than usual and still feeling thirsty. So something is up, and it does require, I would say it requires quite a workup. There's kidney function that needs to be done, 24-hour urine collection just to see what's being excreted in the kidneys, whether there's a lot of protein in it or not.
Okay, so either way, this really, it should be something I have to deal with.
Oh, yeah, you have to deal with it. You can't just ignore this.
It's almost become torture for me because I'm so thirsty.
Yeah, and so something is up. I mean, because normally if you're drinking 8 glasses of water a day, your body should be more than happy with that. And the fact that you're feeling that your mouth is dry all the time, that you're feeling thirsty all the time, something is up. But that being said, it should be a fairly straightforward condition to identify, because you do have specific symptoms where it deals with hydration, and there are specific body systems that deal with that.
That's awesome. Okay, thank you so much.
You're very welcome, okay. Sheila. All the best.
Thanks.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
And that about wraps up our show. We have only about 30 seconds left, and we got through all our calls, and I'm thrilled about that. No one was left waiting. And my thanks to all of the callers and Phil Gaudreau, technical producer of Sunday House Call. We will be back again next week. And again, I encourage you, our email is sundayhousecall@cfra.com. If you have any questions, try to get to those or even read them on the air. I won't read your names out. I'll be able to just read those questions out and answer them for you. Once again, everyone, this looks like a great week that's about to happen. Everyone, enjoy the week, and we'll be back with another edition of Sunday House Call next Sunday.